Part 24, Chapter 1. At the American mine site, day 92 had dawned, windy and cold. And then in mid-morning, 4 hours before the firing time, it had begun to snow. It was not too late for snow, but this snow was a heavy one. It came down in huge, soft flakes that swirled here and there in the wind puffs. Turl did not care. He was jubilant. This would be his last day on Earth. So far, things had gone smoothly. From sunup to the moment it started to snow, he had been outside, checking the wiring and cables. Almost lovingly, he had put a final polish on the firing points on the poles, the points which would change space and transport him once again to his homeland. He had a wonderful story all made up. He would come in with the tale of a mutiny, of a sellout to an alien race, and how he, Turl, fighting hard, had saved the company technology and was forced, alas, to use the ultimate bomb to make certain the company was not further betrayed. They would believe him on Cyclo. They would, of course, fire a camera back and check, but it would record a black smudge. Then he would retire, saying that the strain of it all had been too much. And one fine night, he would go to a cemetery and do a bit of quiet digging and become richer by 10 gold coffin lids and 2 billion credits that he would expose bit by bit, saying he had profited on the exchanges of the various universes. It was a perfect plan. He had been idling about for a few minutes, wondering when the Briganti special squad would come down from the mountains. He didn't like to stay outside. He hated this planet too much. But today, the breathe gas didn't seem to make him ill, and after all, it was a great day. And here they were, the Briganti special squad. They had their bundle with them, just as ordered. It was long and made to look like baggage. Just before the firing, Turl would open the end of it, and one of Snith's bodyguards would pop an air mask on it. And anybody seeing it would think twice about charging the platform. He told the special squad to just dump it on the middle of the platform and then stand by. Now for the next step. Turl went back into the compound and got the small forklift he had had parked there in the corridor, got on it, and went into his office. It was really a toss-up whether he took the coffins first or the console. The coffins could stand the weather better. With a Briganti squad there, nobody could come up and steal them. They were too heavy. He paused for a moment, looking at his rug. There was a dust tread mark there. But then he thought he must have made it himself. His X mark was there on each coffin. With 4 rapid runs and very expert machine handling, he got the 4 coffins outside and dumped them on the platform, 4 trips. On each trip, he cautioned the squad to be alert and watch them. Now for the console. He tipped it up on edge to get at the hollow bottom. He unlocked a cabinet and got the booby trap and put it under the front edge of the bottom. He would not set it yet. He would give it 10 minutes from when he operated the console at firing time. The length of the firing would be 3 minutes. He had decided to take it easy on himself. And the recoil time would be about 40 seconds later. So, 6 minutes and 20 seconds after he fired, bang! No console! He took it out and put it down on the oversized metal platform made for it. A platform about 10 feet by 7 feet, just inside the atmosphere armor zone. All nicely figured out. The big bus bars which operated the atmosphere armor cable had long since been installed on a raised board. He hadn't expected snow, but he had put a weather shield on the cable board. He hadn't put a shelter for the console itself, so now he had to throw a piece of tarpaulin over it to keep snow off the buttons. Turl adjusted the console's position and then got the forklift out of there. He simply dumped it. What did it matter? Those animals had left machinery all over the place. Big magnetic cranes, blade scraper, diggers. What a mess. He got busy connecting the power cables from the poles to the console. It was quite a massive lot of cables. He didn't want to trip on his way from the console when he punched in the coordinates to the platform, so he bundled them all together. It made a snake about 6 inches in diameter. Turl double-checked the color codes. Yes, he had them all correct. He checked the armor cable by turning it on. A lot of new snow flew into the air in a circle. Yes, it worked. He turned it off. He checked the juice input to the console. All live. Turl looked at his watch. It was a full hour to firing time. Time to go in for a mouthful of Kerbango. He surveyed the office. Last time he would ever see this place. Thank the devils. Turl opened his cabinets and began to dump anything and everything into the recycling bin. He opened the false backs and bottoms and consigned anything in them to oblivion. The habits of a security chief were too strong. He dumped all his reams of notes and formulas into the maw of the recycler. Then he noticed it wasn't running. Ah, of course, he must have blown the compound fuses when he put that armor cable on. Who cared? This planet was going up in smoke anyway. He went to his closet and got his dress uniform and boots out, and quickly changed. He put on his parade cap. He looked at himself in the mirror. Pretty good. Turl threw a few things in a travel bag. He looked at his watch. 20 minutes to go. The snow he could see through the compound roof was coming down even heavier. Who cared? He put on a breathe mask with a fresh pair of cartridges, picked up the beautifully wrapped and very difficult to unwrap ultimate bomb, picked up his travel kit, and left his office for the last time. All was ready outside. 500 Brigantes, bows protected from the weather, looking a bit huddled and cold even in their buffalo coats, had been marched up and now stood in the formation he had carefully pointed out. A total ring with its back to the atmosphere cable, a nearly solid wall of Brigantes. Captain Arf Moifi seemed to be the officer in charge of them all. Turl addressed him sternly.
Now you and your men all understand that you are only to use bows and poisoned arrows and knives or bayonets. There must be no firing of powder or blast weapons.
Please guard door that,
called General Sniff. Ah, good. General Sniff and an honor guard of 6 Brigantes, all of them in air masks, were on the platform, armed with bows which they were protecting from the snow. Turl looked around. It was a bit hard to see through these snowflakes and gusts of wind. He had heard a chattering from somewhere. What was that? By the crap nebula, the whole Brigante tribe was gathered down by the morgue to see General Sniff off. Amazing. The women were all bundled up against the snow, and off-duty mercenaries were in among them. What a filthy mob. Good thing he was wearing a mask, for he knew they smelled awful. And there was Brown Limper Staffer and Lars Thorinson. They had come up on the plateau with a ground car and were standing there. The very people he wanted to see. Turl walked over to them. Instead of saying goodbye, or even nice to have known you, Brown Limper Staffer said,
I don't see Tyler.
Turl stopped before him. Brown Limper was all bundled up in some kind of expensive fur. Snow was falling upon his hair and collar. His eyes looked feverishly overbright.
Oh, he'll be here. He'll be here.
Turl looked down at Brown Limper's feet. There was a case there, a fat case, about 3 feet long. Aha! Turl stooped, and before Brown Limper or Lars could stop him, picked up the case and, with a cuff of his paw, broke the locks. A Thompson submachine gun. So he was right to distrust this animal. One shot from this thing during a firing could blow up the platform. Turl took the weapon by the barrel and with his paws bent it in a half circle. He threw it aside.
That was not nice. You could have blown up the whole place.
Brown Limper didn't seem upset. His eyes still looked furtive. Turl took Lars's belt gun, took the cartridge canister out of it, and threw it 50 feet away.
No firing,
said Turl, waggling a cautionary claw in front of their faces. Did Brown Limper have something else? Turl wondered. He looked quite unhinged, but not about the guns.
Here,
said Turl in a cajoling tone of voice.
Here is a nice present to make it up to you.
He handed Brown Limper the thoroughly wrapped ultimate bomb. It weighed about 80 pounds, and as Brown Limper took it, he almost dropped it. Turl, in some apprehension, caught it before it could fall. Turl managed a smile as he restored it to Brown Limper.
It's a nice gift. Open it when I'm gone, and you'll find the answer to your most golden dreams. Something to remember me by.
No danger in giving it to them. It would take them an hour to get the wrapper off. Then, one lift of the lid, and bang! No planet! Turl patted Brown Limper on the head. He glanced at his watch. Still plenty of time. He walked over toward the platform. Captain Arf Moifey called his men to attention. Turl marched on by. With a bold and martial step, Turl walked to the console. He reached down and closed the bus bar on the atmosphere armor cable. Snow flew up all along its length. Good. He was now safe. A solid wall enclosed the console and platform, and beyond that, a solid wall of armed bodies. He glanced at his watch. He had plenty of time. He walked over to the baggage and kicked his own kit into the pile. The Brigantes had brought quite a mound of air bottles for themselves. General Sniff, militarily dressed in a buffalo coat, his diamond in his cap, his crossbelts jammed with poisoned arrows, gave him a chest-pound salute. But he asked,
"You gonna change the money for sure?"
He pointed to a huge mound of money, Brown Limper notes.
"Absolutely,"
Turl reassured him.
"Credits go where credit is due. Besides, you have me hostage, don't you?"
Sniff was reassured. And speaking of hostages, Turl leaned over the long bundle and opened the top of it. Black, glaring eyes pierced him. He beckoned to the Brigante so assigned, and the man pushed an air mask on the face and shoved the bottle onto the chest. He buckled the bottle on. He had almost gotten bit. Turl looked at his watch. The time was coming up. He walked over to the console. He moved the toggle switch in the upper left-hand corner to the up position. He threw on the activating bus bar. The console's top buttons glowed. Turl sat there, counting down the seconds. Then he punched in the long-since-memorized coordinates. He checked his watch for the exact instant. He punched the firing button. He reached down and activated the 10-minute time bomb. The wires began to build up a hum. Out of the tail of his eye, he saw a man rise up beyond the Brown Limper car. Somebody jumping up. Somebody in a radiation suit. Turl looked hard and suddenly realized it looked like, and must be, the animal. Ha! Brown Limper had gotten his Tyler, after all. Turl walked over to the center of the platform. The hum was building up. What joy to think of being safe on Cyclo in just under 3 minutes.